Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And welcome. Today's date is June the 14th. 2023, and the year we're half, ladies and gentlemen, we are almost halfway completely through the year of 2023. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you follow us on a regular basis, that the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiative for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora. Also to educate the African American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You also know, ladies and gentlemen, if you join us on a regular basis, that this show is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, and the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Facebook, Twitter, and Link. Also, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which I am still, at the present time, the current president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. We bring you this programming every week through the window of Blog Talk Radio. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have scheduled guests today, but you can still always remember that that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number, because you'll be in our green room, and we want to bring you right on into our living room, and we want to have a discussion about some issues that we find very, very, very timely, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, I took the liberty this morning, and I went down to a informational setting that was put on by AdvancedEnergy.org, which is a national advocacy group that brings together policy organizations in the renewable energy sector. They are the ones who are setting the policy. Unfortunate, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't see anyone sitting there that looked like me. It's very, very interesting how policy has been developed around the renewable energy sector. And I'll get into that later on, this discussion a little more later on into our show. But in the meantime, we want everybody once again to remember that that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a scheduled guest scheduled today, but we've looked at some issues that are very, very concerning as it relates to why most car dealers still don't have any electric vehicles. Now, I find this to be a very, very, very interesting subject matter, being that we've got billions of dollars through the Inflation Reduction Act currently going out of the door for all type of charging infrastructure, as well as research and data in this area, as we begin to look at driveelectric.gov, driveelectric.gov. And if you'll go to that website, ladies and gentlemen, it is a government website which your tax dollars pays for, but it provides all of the infrastructure, state plans for EV charging infrastructure that's been submitted by each state in the union and the District of Columbia, as well as Puerto Rico. Now, there are billions of dollars on the line. I seriously, seriously suggest if you're interested and you have land and you're interested in developing a EV charging hub on some of your property, that you go to that website. It will be very, very informative and helpful in terms of providing the necessary data that you'll need to sort of move forward. Also, I'd like to put it in a plug for ChargePoint, which I had the privilege yesterday on being on a webinar, and they gave out quite a bit of information as relative to programs and grants and opportunities. And some of the things that were discussed yesterday on the webinar with ChargePoint was state programs, the National EV Vehicle Infrastructure Program. It's called NEVI, NEVI, Alternative Fuel Corridors, direct through the state Department of Transportation. Stations have to be less than 1 mile from the exit from the interstate, and they're looking at retail, convenience, restaurants, grocery stores, in order for you to be able to tap into that. Also, there's $5 billion, ladies and gentlemen, and the deadline was today for getting your application in. So as they indicated yesterday, if you did not weren't able to participate in this first round, there'll be other rounds of other opportunities coming through the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. Also, there's $2.5 billion in the CIF charging and fueling, and it will be opening in its upcoming. And things that you want to know is how to prepare. What is your type of site type? Is it for workplace, business, multifamily, highway corridor, fleet, community? Will the station be open to the public? The quote for the electrical design. How many stations? Now, these are just some of the points that I wrote down on yesterday. I just wanted to share that information with you this morning. But we want to look at why there aren't a lot of electric vehicles at many of our car dealers. And this is an article that was written by Umair Afran, and it was published on 6/6/23. So That was have been last Tuesday. And this particular article, as I have given you the title already, Why Most Car Dealers Still Don't Have Electric Vehicles. Electric cars and trucks are more popular than ever, and sales are growing. But if you want one, you will probably have a hard time finding an EV in stock near you. Two-thirds of U.S. car dealers surveyed in the new Sierra Club study published Monday did not have battery, electric, or plug-in hybrids for sale in 2022, new or used. There are more dealerships that have electric vehicles the last time we did this report in 2019, but it's still shockingly low. Catherine Garcia, director of the Clean Transportation for All campaign at the Sierra Club, noted, transportation is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S., with passenger cars and trucks making up 57% of the share. So electrifying sedans, SUVs, pickups, and essential components of the strategy for meeting climate change targets the U.S. has committed to cutting its total emissions in half by year from 2005 levels to 2030. Meanwhile, automakers like General Motors have committed to going all electric and there's looming bans of fossil fuel and power cars in some of the largest car buying states like California and New York. So what's the holdup? A big part of this due to supply chain blockages. The shortfalls in semiconductors, battery production, prevents manufacturers from making enough electric vehicles to meet the demand. And this is what we were talking about this morning, ladies and gentlemen, at this event that I went to. It was very educational. It was very, very informative. I got an opportunity to sort of drop some questions to some folks after the event was over. Now, the supply chain blockage, which was shortfalls, as we indicated, with semiconductors. These were things that were discussed about, I think it's, what was it, $3.1 billion being invested in a manufacturing facility that's going to be built in Michigan, and one is going to be built in Ohio. And battery production, preventing manufacturers from producing, as we indicated, enough cars to meet the demand. Some of the largest car makers in the world, Honda, Toyota, has few, if any, EVs and plug-in hybrids at all for sale in North America last year. According to the Sierra Club survey, 44% of the car dealers who did have EVs on their lots would gladly sell them if they could get their hands on one. The larger bottleneck is that the manufacturers themselves, Garcia said, about 45% of the dealers are without EVs, said they would sell them even if they were, they wouldn't sell them if they were available. Oh, they wouldn't? The structure of the car sales model can put dealer manufacturers and customers at odds, since the economics of EVs can disrupt the business model for dealerships. It's another critical choke point. If a dealer is resistant to stocking electric vehicles and trucks, the buyer might not have a nearby option for a specific EV they want, since manufacturers grant dealerships monopolies in given areas. With the rise of electric car makers like Tesla and Rivian, however, there's a push for car companies to sell their vehicles directly to customers without a middleman. It's forcing major automotive companies and dealers to adopt. It will chart the route ahead for zero emission cars and trucks. Why car dealers matter so much for electric cars and trucks? Now, that's an interesting question. They went on to try to address the question this way. The EV buying experience varies a lot depending on what kind of car you're looking for and where you are. 90% of the Mercedes-Benz dealers had an EV sale compared to 11% of Honda retailers, according to the Sierra Coast study. It includes used vehicles for sale that were made by another manufacturer. Your best bet for finding an EV on the lot was in the southern U.S. states like Georgia and Florida, where 40% of the dealers had an electric vehicle for sale. In the western states like California, Oregon, and Washington, only 27% of the dealers had EVs in stock. The region also accounted for 45% of EV sales in the U.S., so the lower stock is likely due for based on more demand. Ford dealerships in Richmond County, California, the state has the highest EV sales in the country, according to Philip Morris and Bloomberg. Some manufacturers are racing to keep up while coping with recalls. Dealers, in turn, are adjusting their supplies, but also trying to accommodate how EVs are changing the way they do business. All states have rules that encourage and require car makers to sell vehicles to customers through the dealership. There are close to 17,000 franchises, new car dealers in the U.S., and they sold 13.7 million light-duty vehicles last year, according to the National Automotive Dealership Association. Originally, these regulations were designed to prevent a handful of major car companies from colluding across the country and fixing prices. Dealers also expanded the footprint for car makers and gave buyers a local point of contact. They're technically independent franchises, which means they can set their own prices and incentives, but car makers have a lot of leverage in how the dealership functions via the system of marketing at Indiana University explained that the car dealerships have three main functions. They sell cars, they take trade-ins on behalf of the manufacturer, they provide loans to buyers, and they perform maintenance and repairs. It turns out that the parts and services can account for nearly half of the dealership's profits, but EVs don't need oil changes, spark plugs, or valve checks. All else equal to electric cars has fewer mechanical parts than a gas or diesel car, which directly means that the revenue a car dealer makes from electric cars is much lower than that with what a dealership makes on a gas diesel counterpart. And that's where all the issues lie, ladies and gentlemen. When we look at part franchises like AutoZone, different large box part operations around the country. Here in the DMV area, we have what we have, Pep Boys, local. Then you have a litany of suppliers for parts for combustion engine vehicles, which is totally eliminated with electric vehicles, other than the battery and the tire rotations. You don't have any sweat in terms of all the other issues that derive with combustion engine vehicles. The foremost function that a dealer can provide is that of educating their buyers. Customers cannot just use a ChatGPT or Google and have all the information. They need to interact with human beings. But dealers have to make investments in their infrastructure to sell EVs. Ford has created an EV certification program for its dealers. Now, you can. There's a blue link there. You can click on that. Ford is demanding its dealers get serious about EVs. Two-thirds, they say, are in it. Ford Motor Company Jim Farley said to the CEO that 1,920 of America's roughly 3,000 Ford dealers have agreed to sign up for the company's EV certification program, which involves charging investments and no haggle sales programs. Many buyers are holding up on the automotive industry wide sale transition to electric vehicles, getting battery costs down, getting range up, and convincing car buyers to break up with gasoline for a good just for some of the more commonly known ones. But there is also a very powerful group that has been much help so far, that hasn't been much help so far to car dealers. Increasingly, car companies are giving their dealership partners an ultimatum: get on board or get out. And at least some of the Ford dealers seem to be taking the message. At the Automotive News Congress this week, an event put on by the industry publication, Ford CEO Jim Farley said that, as I indicated, 1,920 of the America's roughly 3,000 Ford retailers have agreed to sign up for this certification program, which involves investment. Now, this article goes on. Interestingly, the majority of dealers, about 1,650, choose the certify elite programs, which require investments up to $1.2 million. Another 261 dealers chose the lesser certified status, which means investments of $500,000. But that matters of designation all means that Ford dealers will only be authorized to sell 25 EVs per year. The elite dealers will be allocated far more EVs if the dealers do commit to anything. They'll only be selling gasoline and hybrid cars. Ford executives have said, putting them potentially very, very much behind the curve and the automotive plan for big EV rollouts in the coming years. This is where we are, ladies and gentlemen. This is what this is all about. You always have to look at the bottom line and look at the profit margins for these companies. And repair, maintenance, and parts is a big part of a dealership's revenue. Believe me when I tell you that. I used to be in the car business. Years ago, I had a used car dealership. It is good for Ford if it suggests that the initial investment is expensive. No, I had a dealer's license. Let me correct that. Not a dealership, but a dealer's license. So I went auctions. So that is how our business model at that time was formulated, and we just carried consumers directly to the auctions. We purchased the vehicles at our cost. We sold them to the customer at that dealer wholesale cost. Therefore, people were getting those vehicles with whatever warranties that came from them through the auction block. And many of them, or it's a term that we used to call love to repeat, as is. So as you buy this vehicle, you have to have it inspected to make sure it didn't have a lot, any issues, and that it was properly serviced, and all of the bugs and the issues before that vehicle was taken to that that public auction, a private auction, dealer auction, was taken care of. Because when you buy it, you bought it. But there, you can get some great deals at these auctions. Make no mistake about that. Now, why is it so hard for electric vehicles to go on the road? It's good for it. It's just that the initial investment, okay, we talked about this. Okay, it's expensive, said Devin Stevens, general manager of Bannister Ford in Marlow Heights, Maryland, here in the DMV market area. Stevenson said that the dealership is gearing up to install a level 3 fast charger this year and can top up, can charge up an EV in minutes, but require dedicated grid connections and special electric hardware. Similar General Motors and parent companies of Chevrolet is enacting standards for its dealers. For EV dealers, must maintain proper service tools, battery charging equipment, and training, as well as meeting customer experience standards, said David Caldwell, spokesman for GM. More than 90% of the Chevrolet dealers are enrolled, but even if the manufacturers build them and dealers sell them, the ticker, as they say, question is whether enough people will buy electric vehicles and trucks to make this all worthwhile. With borrowing costs increasing, EVs are tougher to sell since the average have a higher sticker price than their fossil fuel counterparts. Earlier this month, Ford Man announced a price cut of 8% for the Mustang Mach-E for dealers, how much they invested. EV manufacturers now is a delicate balancing act. It's going to depend on how fast we can get them. Can we afford them? Does this make sense overall in the next 24 months? If, to me, it's a bit of a toss-up, Stevenson says. What if you want to avoid the dealership altogether? You see, this is an interesting question, ladies and gentlemen. Dealership franchise laws across the U.S. benefit dealers, but pose a problem for manufacturers that want to sell directly to consumers in some states. Tesla operates a factory in Texas, but the company cannot sell cars to Texans directly. The cars have to be shipped out to the state before to be delivered by a Texas buyer. Often EVs only car makers like Rivian and Lucid will sell directly to customers. This doesn't factor into the Sierra Club's calculations. So EVs are more accessible to more people than the number of cars and lots that they sell on. EV companies say that the direct customer model lets them elude the haggling tradition of car dealers, avoid costs, maintenance, dealerships, lots, and sales staff. 23 states now allow direct sales of EVs only at automotive companies. They will still face restrictions in many cases. Several more states are working on laws to make direct sales easier, but relaxing rules for EV makers, dealers, for dealer licenses. Now, these are all issues of concern. Conventional car makers like Ford and Volkswagen have recently started to echo this, letting customers buy cars online, pick them up from from a dealer rather than going through the sales process in person. Yet even EVs need to have their tires rotated, and all electric companies are rushing to build out service centers to handle maintenance and recalls, are learning on traditional automobile makers. How important is the convenient local service to a customer? Since 2021, Tesla owners have come to GM dealerships for service on more than 11,000 occasions, Caldwell said. He added that while EVs may not yet be available everywhere, the automobile industry is making the largest and fastest technology changes in the history. In 2020, electric cars and trucks are accounted for 4.2% of new vehicle sales worldwide. In 2021, 8.3%. The last year, 14%. Now, this article, ladies and gentlemen, you can find on our news and events tab that is dealing and addressing this issue of EV charging infrastructure. Like I said, it's a whole lot of moving parts. There's supply chain issues. There are a lot of things going on, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a slight pause for the calls here on Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact, and we'll be right back on the other side, and we're going to change gears, and we're going to look at some other subject matter as it relates to Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do.
Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Now, I'm your host, Ronald Buffay. In our first segment of our show today, of course, it dealt with why most car dealers still don't have electric vehicles. And it's quite interesting. Because when you look at the bottom line, if I'm a dealership owner and I've got to invest $1.2 million charging infrastructure and other issues, and it completely shuts down my 50% of my revenue stream, which is going to eliminate my repair department at my dealership, I'm going to think twice, too, about going to the electric vehicles. There must be other ways and incentives for car dealerships and the car manufacturers to get this switch of the American public to go from combustion engines, a fossil fuel, to electric. That's not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen, without some serious collaborations. A number of issues that came up at this forum this morning that was put on by Advanced Energy Group, which is a nonprofit organization that deals in public policy. Now, this organization has a tremendous amount of influence in the public policy arena as it relates to advocacy for moving toward a green economy, as the Biden administration has indicated. It was interesting to me when I brought up the issue with Advanced Energy United, one of their policy directors, and I mentioned the fact that Michael Murray of Data Mission produced the report that came out last year that indicated that 14.5 million U.S. citizens, who some homeowners, some businesses, as well as churches, have had their data sharing options on their meters deactivated by the utility companies, which means that the meter's been short for the meter sharing option for the homeowners been cut off. Now, many folks have gone to their public service commissions around the country, and they file complaints with the local public service commission, but only one, not one state, but a territory, which we know the District of Columbia is not a state, it's a territory. But the former U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C., Racine, filed a lawsuit against Exxon's subsidiary, Pepco, in the nation's capital over the same issue. But that lawsuit only targeted the subscription or community solar programs in the District of Columbia. The homeowner, businesses, churches were left out of this litigation. Why, I do not know. It is very, very difficult. And I know this firsthand in reaching out to various environmental law schools here in the DMV area. We've gone to Georgetown. We've contacted American University. We've contacted the University of Maryland about, and they have environmental studies programs on the graduate level in law. Nobody wants to take this on behalf of residents in these jurisdictions. I had the privilege of speaking with Mrs. Sandra Fry, who is the head of the General Counsel's Office for the People's Council here in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., concerning this issue. They had just recently had a youth summit that was held at Catholic University here in Washington, D.C. last month, and she informed me when I broached this question, why were D.C. homeowners, businesses, and churches left out of that litigation that was bought? She said they would be filing another amendment or amending the complaint to include homeowners, businesses, and folks. So I think what I'm doing makes a difference because I'm the only one beating the drum around this. But the point that I'm making, when I brought up these two issues this morning, the deactivation of over 14.5 million, the data sharing option on 14 million American citizens who install PV systems, which undermines the Biden administration's plan. It totally undermines the solar industry. I mentioned this to the vice president of the Solar Industry Trade Association. I also brought up the fact that Justice 40 has only been adopted by four states. What are their organizations, as policy organizations, doing to push the adoption of Justice 40 to be adopted by state legislatures around the country, being that they have such a reaching influence. That is one of the reasons why I went to and got up in my bed this morning and made sure I was there so I could speak to someone surrounding these two issues, because the National Association of Blacks and Solar, we are pivoting and looking at pushing to get this legislation here in Maryland. I'm working with my House delegate. This is Dana Tavares, represents the 47th district here in Prince George's County, and she has agreed that she would in fact introduce legislation in the fall of this year, 2023, that a Maryland state legislature adopt the Justice 40 initiative, which has been signed into law by President Biden. Matter of fact, it was the first thing he did when he came to office. This will make it legally binding on the state, where businesses, counties, municipalities, people who are going after grants, if they feel that they have applied for grants to the state level and they have not received any funding, they can look at how Justice 40 is being applied. It's very clear to me that it's not 40% of anything is coming to the African American community in forms of contracts or anything else. So these are very, 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 very important issues, and they're also everyday pocketbook issues, because when the utility companies can deactivate 14.5 million residents' data sharing options, and they don't know what their systems are generating, that means that those credits can be taken by the utility company and sold over the commodities market on a day-to-day basis, and billions of dollars and millions of dollars are being made off the backs of these people who have invested in putting PV systems on their rooftops to combat climate change. So if you want to take all of the financial incentive out of it by allowing the utility companies to deactivate 14.5 million meters, what sense does it make for people to invest to combat climate change? In other words, we got one planet, and the GOP, which I call them the gas, oil, and petroleum industry, they got billions of dollars, ladies and gentlemen, and they are everywhere with their real gunslingers. They're called lobbyists, and they carry a big wallet financed. And we got some of the best legislators and policymakers that money can buy. And that's where the problem is. So there are conflicts. This was being brought out today about the issue of states' rights and federalism, whether the federal government needs to put in place federal policy on a lot of the issues that are impeding the adoptions of renewable energy portfolio standards, which the U.S. House and Senate has already passed into law by 2025, saying that all 50 states must have some form of renewable portfolio standard legislation in place to combat climate change. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that. So as we look at what's going on in the renewable energy sector, it's always good to go to places and raise questions to those folks who have networks and an influence, and they're dealing with public policy on the state, federal, and local level, because policy drives dollars. That's the bottom line. And And we as African Americans in this renewable, which we're going to be affected, whether we like it or not. Matter of fact, I was on Carl Nelson's show last Tuesday morning with my state delegate, Mrs. Dana Chavez, and we talked about these issues. And Carl Nelson brought up the issue that he just had an economist, African-American economist, who came on his show and talked about this EV charge and this green economy is being paid for by black folks and poor folks who get no benefit out of it. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Isn't that always the way that the think tanks and the policymakers look at things? They're only looking at things from their interest perspective. It's time for black folks to understand that we have to step to these tables, let people know we're there, let people know that we understand how our communities, which we already know have been disproportionately affected by these same utility companies, health-wise, with asthma affecting our African-American youth, the loss of property values. If your house is in a 35-mile radius of one of these coal power plant burning facilities with all of the different chemicals and carcinogens that are coming in the air that are cancer-causing and affecting people's health, because we have always been put into purchasing properties, and once we buy the properties, then here comes the developer, because whites don't want these plants and these manufacturing facilities in their neighborhoods, affecting their property values, affecting their health. So we as have to look at this thing and call it what it is. It's called environmental racism. And how do we combat these issues? We have to understand how to connect the dots. Now, in looking at other issues, I had the privilege on Monday morning of being at our state's capitol at the Raven House office building with the Foundation for Democracy in Africa, Mr. Fred Olatunde. I'm going to mention that you can find this information on our news and events tab at positivechangepc.com. We are supporting and advocating for advancing the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which is, and Civil Society Network, which is a U.S. trade policy initiative for export and import trading with African nations. Very close and dear friend of mine, Mr. Fred Olatunde, who is the director of the Democracy for the Foundation for Democracy in Africa's organization, has been working tirelessly over the last 30 years putting these type of policies in place. And we understand the importance of this as it relates around energy-related business opportunities for our African-American-based firms, because it is very, very difficult for our firms to compete here in the U.S., so sometimes you got to go where you can get paid. When it's all said and done, that's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you had the premiere of Wendy, W-I-N-D-E, signing the AGOA COS petition for the extension and enhancement of AGOA. And they talked about how many thousands of jobs AGOA has created, the impact on the economy, and how helpful it has been in terms of growing their GNP in these countries. gross national product, for folks that don't know what GNP is. It's the gross national product, okay, in terms of how you grow and expand an economy. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a number of issues and topics that we want to share in the last few minutes of our show today. We're looking at DOE launches a new roundtable for the American-made solar prize. You'll be able to find that on our news and events. You'll also be able to find U.S. Department of Labor training and employment notice 28-22, partnering with supplemental nutrition programs, agencies to support able-bodied adults as the public health emergency ends. In other words, they're taking people off SNAP and food assistance programs and telling these folks, you got to go to work. Well, if you got to, they got to go to work and say, I'm there. Well, somebody better be there with workforce development training, because the skill sets have changed, ladies and gentlemen. They don't need people for manual labor anymore. They got something called robotics and AI, artificial intelligence. And it's going to have a drastic, fast impact on this economy, because that is what the U.S. is moving toward. And that's a whole nother conversation. But you'll be able to find information about these training grants. Also, U.S. clean energy manufacturing boom has begun, and it says, now what? This is another subject matter I intended to share a little time on this morning, and it talks about the different manufacturing deals that are popping up all over the country. Unfortunately, most of it's going in the red states. Some's going in the blue states, but the majority of it's going in the red states. This is why the Republicans turn around and they voted for Biden's campaign, because they know something called bring home the bacon. This is bringing billions of dollars in investment in red states. And we say Joe Manchin in West Virginia. So it's always understanding what it's about. West Virginia, on a recent May Day, some 235 people gathered across from the county in a vacant lot on the banks of the Ohio River behind the tents. They were mangled under radiant blue skies, crunched into the earth, the remains of a demolished steel plant that has been quiet since 2005. This was the groundbreaking ceremony for Conform Energy, a clean tech startup based in Berkeley, California, and Somerville, Massachusetts, whose leaders chose this historic steel town in the far northeast panels of West Virginia for their first commercial site factory from a century ago. Now, this is what's going on, ladies and gentlemen. If you are from a rural community and you have a county and you know that they got land for manufacturing, you need to be calling their Office of Economic Development and finding out why they're not involved in this process. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it is a process. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our show today. We didn't get any calls in. If someone would like to call in still before we close out, I would love to have you to do that. That call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. But as we begin to look at this proliferation of manufacturing around this country, then African Americans, we need to be asking the question, why aren't any of these properties being made available to black private landowners and black farmers around this country? Where is the 40% of the benefit? How does this come to our community if no manufacturing facilities, no EV charging infrastructure is going on African-American-owned lands. We have a number of black families and farmers who have land that have interstate highways cut directly through their properties. I know this for a fact. I have a small data bank of these names, the families, and their land. So it's not like getting this information out in the public sphere would not provide more contacts for people who are interested in looking at how they benefit who are of African and African-American descent in this country around this new green economy. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the, as we said, the close of our show. And always remember, this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Corp, which serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the high cost in energy cost at our historically black colleges and universities. Also, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally, nationally, and throughout the diaspora. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we don't want you to meet us back here next week. We want you to beat us back here. And as we always close, we always say what? Conclude another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. Singing,
why don't you
sing it?